And good afternoon, everyone. It's 4 o'clock. Thanks for tuning in to CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located here in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. This is Finding a Voice, a spoken word program airing here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And had to check something out on the computer here. Having a little bit of an issue. Hopefully everything is going to be okay here. Anyway, we get things lined up. Coming up on the show today, from a September book launch and reading event at Novel Idea Bookstore, you'll hear Stuart Ross launching his latest collection of poetry, The Sky is a Sky in the Sky. Sarah Moses launching her debut short fiction collection called Strange Water. And then with each their own work, you'll hear readings by Wanda Pramsma and Vera Hadzik. Jason Haru emceed the event that night. This, just so you know, this was over an hour, so it will run into next hour, a few minutes today. So it will also run uninterrupted, though. So just thought I'd let you know that ahead of time. And in the second hour, following the conclusion then of the first hour's event from an October 8th event at Novel Idea Bookstore, you'll hear Queen's University professor Mark Epricht both reading from and discussing his new book as he launches it, and it's called Accidental Queer. Before we start, though, I just want to do this just so you know, our funding drive started on on November 1st and runs all the way through to December 31st. And I'd really encourage you to please go to our website and and I'm going to go ahead. Actually, we've got a few promos here. I'm actually going to play a couple of those right now so I can get set up here with everything else. So let's go ahead and do this, and I will be right back.
CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st. Help us raise $25,000 to support our local arts and artists and keep our community informed with local news, concerts, and events listings on air and on our website. Visit CFRC.ca today and make your gift to Kingston's longest-running broadcaster serving our community since 1922. Get a tax receipt via Queen's University or get sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our weekly raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. For every $5 donated, you get one more chance to win. Thank you for your support.
Hello, CFRC listeners. This is Christina Laurie, CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative news reporter. CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st, and you can help CFRC keep our listeners informed on issues that matter with modernized broadcasting equipment and trained team members. Help CFRC hit our $25,000 fundraising goal this year by donating today at CFRC.ca.
And welcome back. As I mentioned, we are, and you heard a couple of different things going on. There's so much that's going to be happening in the over the course of the next couple of months. But I would encourage you to go to our website. I mentioned that we launched our annual funding drive. We're trying to raise $25,000 to support station operations, news, and creative programming, and also upgrades to our recording and performance studios. Just so you know, you can make a difference. I'd encourage you, when you get a chance, please visit CFRC.ca or www.CFRC.ca, and you'll find on there not only how you can donate, and you can do it through Queen's and University, and get a tax receipt, or if you want to qualify for swag and a chance to win our weekly raffles draws for other gifts from some of our donors. You can also just donate directly to CFRC. Anyway, it's all explained and on there. Also, I should tell you how to get there. Again, www.cfrc.ca. And when you see the rolling ribbon of different things, different sites within our website that talks about programming, talks about ads, if you want to do ads. I mean, there are a lot of different, I think there are six or seven different little, I can't think of the name, I want to say icons, but that's not quite it. But anyway, when you see the one that says funding drive, click on where it says donate. That doesn't mean you're going to donate immediately. That's going to take you to the page where you can learn all about the funding drive, and you can find out how to qualify for gifts, and you can also see the donation levels, although every little thing helps. For certain levels, you donate. If you do it again through CFRC, you will qualify for certain gifts and things. So it lists all that. It also lists some special fundraising events that are already scheduled in there already. So please check out that site and, again, help support us as we enter again our funding drive season here, November 1st now through December 31st. And it is 7 minutes after 4 o'clock now. And I'll tell you what, you are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. And let's go ahead and go into our first segment today. Again, just my usual start of the hour announcement is that occasionally some poetry, spoken word, or music played on this show may contain strong language, but it is all played in its entirety with content unedited to honor the creative integrity of both the author and the piece. Let's go ahead now with my recording of a September book launch and reading event at Novel Idea Bookstore. In it, you'll hear Stuart Ross launching his latest collection of poetry, The Sky is a Sky in the Sky, and Sarah Moses launching her debut short fiction collection called Strange Water. And then you'll also hear Wanda Pramsma and Vera Hadzik reading from their own work. And the first voice you're going to hear is that of MC Jason Haru. Here we go.
I think we're going to get started. We'll dive into things shortly. But first, I'm just going to begin with a brief land acknowledgement. Kingston remains on the ancestral homelands of the Huron-Wendat, Anishinaabe, and Haudenosaunee Confederacy. We acknowledge the everlasting presence of these nations and other First Nations, Métis and Inuit, who share this landscape today. We are grateful to reside in and remain visitors to this territory, while acknowledging our responsibility to honor the land, water, and skies with gentle respect and purifying preservation. My name is Jason Haru, and I'll be your host this evening. A host, according to one definition, is a person who receives or entertains other people as guests. But according to another definition, I'm also a living thing where parasites live.
It's going to be pretty exciting.
We have four amazing writers sharing their work with us today. And as you hear each writer, I'm sure you'll be compelled to rush the desk and immediately buy their book, which is good. That's the right thing to do. But we don't want anyone to get hurt, so please restrain yourself for the time being. And when the readings are done and when I'm out of the way, then you can all rush the desk and fight amongst yourselves. So we'll get started. Our first reader today is Vera Hadzik. Vera is a writer from Ottawa, currently working towards an MA in English Literature at Queen's University. Recently, her work has appeared in ARC Poetry Magazine, Periodicities, Experiment O, and elsewhere. Her first chapbook, Fossils You Can Swallow, is for Proper Tales Press, Stewart's Press. So please welcome Vera to the stage.
Thank you so much. Super happy to be here today and looking forward to hear everyone else read later. I have a couple poems that I wrote this past summer, so they're all new. Basically, I went on a family trip to Portugal and Spain and Serbia, and I decided I was going to write a poem every day while I was away, and most of them were, like, terrible. but I selected some that were not terrible, and so I'm going to read those today. This first one was after visiting the Palace of Pena in Portugal, which is a really beautiful palace, by the way, with some interesting history, too. And on kind of outside the palace complex, there's this quote by Portuguese sculptor Rui Chaves, and basically that's the title of my poem. Something somber, distinct, sumptuous. Here's the poem. If a palace is a body, then the Portuguese king is sour bile and digestive juices. The queen is the yellow and spotted cartilage which breaks easy off the bone when cooked in a slow soup. How beautiful! Walls grapefruit red and lemon skin yellow, and the blue-green pearlescence of tile. There's a thin and moving layer of unreality, a sugar cooked to sticky narcissism, sweet tongue numbing. I never saw colors like this. So thick like the rinds of meat and bright like a cross-section of Jupiter or Mars. In the chapel, St. George spears the dragon, its green rubbery skin, the burst of blood at its neck, its red rope tongue. Now this is the secret dormancy of the hillside, the reptiliancy in the mountain, the hidden luxury which whispers its fleshy throat name, its sacrificial mass and dewiness, spilt bodily fluid into what was once a monastery, a house of quiet, of unspeaking, except to someone called God. Is it the soul or the body which is its own separate thing, a luxury of space and form, a dark thing on a light background, finding itself, maybe itself, in the decadence of trees and soil, worse, in the outpouring of color from bleeding, lipidous palace walls. In the palace which was once a monastery, the soul is the dark curve which haunts the crenellated arches, the stone pimpling above the gateway, an imitation of coral and anemone. The soul as an interminable black sphere, and the spear which buries itself in night-like earth. The soul or the body as a jellyfish, the jellyfish as a thing which encloses its own body with filaments of stinging self. Its soul as in the way it moves, still and dark, in waters which are also still and dark. If egg hatching occurs in the palatial carapace of the mother's spider body, this is a cage in eight legs, or a body folded into itself like a paper sculpture. The human hands are the most foldable part of what is otherwise an inflexible body. Here I make my hands into a pyramid, a prism, a house. I can fold them into a prayer or into the three-fingered apricot pit which is used to sign the cross. For me, the poem stops at the taste. Cool tile, a feast for kings, the meat on the bone, the lizard skewered, the blood spilt, the thought, the thought wasted, the richness of silence, except it seems always embodied in these physical things, this paring down of the soul so the body might hook its heavy and vital self in blood and tissue to the ground. Thank you. This next one was written. Hold on, let me just check that the pages are in the right order now, because that was not. No, it was like flipped on the wrong side and it was just blank, and I was like, great. this next one I wrote when I was visiting family in Serbia. This is Stopping and Starting. Every year, Belgrade feels hotter and hotter. The dogs come out past 10. The city comes out past 10, people glorying now in this darkened heat. A bowl with a hole poked into it. Five men eat pizza on the hood of the car. The lights are on and the lights are staring and cold. They are one bit of cold in the thick, sweating dark. Every time I come here, I'm forced to reckon with change. In a photo album, I pick out the buildings of my university, captured around the year 2000, the turn of the millennium. In Serbia, there's no longer true winter. In the photographs, Ottawa is eternally cold. My mother in her red coat. My own red coat has holes in it. It's not the same coat. When I hear people speak the language, it is like they have a clockwork mechanism lodged in their throats, which they are unpicking with their tongue, laryngic muscles, and teeth. The softened consonants and tooth-driven letters are the rhythms and descents of gears and rivets, solid and clicking and closing and opening in the enclave of the mouth. I cannot make all these sounds. I come here only half able to speak. Half my words stick in the labyrinth of the voice box. Some come out garbled. This is the car which may or may not stop on the untranslatable road. Last year, the city was also hot. Last year, I expelled more food than I did words. This was maybe the closest I could get to native speaking, to open my mouth and, hunched over, vomit things that were born in the ground. Red pieces of tomato in the toilet bowl, chunks of bread, the sizzling rainbow of red and orange, and eventually the yellow white of water kept too long inside the frustrated body. And I'm going to read another poem from Serbia. This one is a bit longer, so hopefully not too long. This one is called Supermarket. In the black fog of the sun morning, the knight and the lord crosses a busy street and feels the weight of her body's crime spilling open in front of everyone in the publicly cold and dirty tiles of the supermarket. The wolf, along with the fox, is hunting. The dog, used to the quick and biting winter hunt, must acclimatize now to the slow and patient summer crawl, to the climbing heat, flies helicoptering about the tail and the long-nosed face, the drooping hound ears, the flies into the city's eyes, carried into the forest and seeking to understand a language of loud quiet. The churches and temples of the city are towered. They end in cupolas, and their crosses scissor the sky as surgical instruments probe skin. Now the body's soft hummings swell up against the walls of her own self. The knight and the lord reported to the palace on another morning only recently, and that morning spanned into eternity. Dawns and moons and long, clutching heat waves. All this time she spent there in supplication, naming every cell and every tissue and every body she had ever inhabited, and her reward was a suit of armor crafted of salty roast pig skin, bubbled and blackened like metal crafted in the forge. But in the heat of today's fog sun morning, the oils melted off her, and her name list was unraveling, the glucosic necklaces of her DNA threads, embarrassing not only because she was knight and lord, but because, oh, so much of her was visibly physical. In the city, the world is small but cracked and bearably open. The four-footed creatures follow her movements and witness her failure. The dog is less cunning and has fallen behind because the pig liver rivets of her armor have come undone and fallen on the dusty floor. How small, distinct each liver looks, like a pomegranate, smooth-skinned and fitted for the hand or the long mouth. The animals ignore the knight and the lord where she kneels on the street. Several shopping carts crash into the day's mounting exhalation heat, which hangs over her like a mantle. The cooling houses with their breathing glass bricks look over the paleness of fat and cream, vats of paint and lilies dewed in juice. The animals have set up shop. They are selling green onion, heads of cabbage, peaches with hair, even ingrown. Tomatoes fall on the ground beside the knight and the lord, who is now, for the first time in her life, bleeding. She has cut her finger on glass while coffee beans turn to fine powder underneath her bleeding knees. She is not naked, but feels that way. This will cost an arm and a leg, but the best I can do is half a liver. Always when eating, it is important to be mindful and anchored in the self, which is not the body, which exists only in the mind, except in rare occurrences such as these. Rule number 14. Never hunt with teeth in the rainy, rotting, and saccharine summer season, when the worst heat can come upon you without warning. In the summertime, the heat blinds everyone. The story goes, when there is heat like this, no one is hungry. The prey itself feels like it is little more than a wasp of vapor. At night, the earth salvages the moonlight. Now, as the sky gasps for air, as eyes see clearly into the galactic dark, now is time for hunger. The fox and the wolf, when hungry, will devour one another. The dog will eat itself. By her own bloody hand, the knight and the lord takes the rotless food and pays the price. And half skinless, she eats it all right there, right then, tomato flesh and peach water filling the cavities of her own anatomical sculpture. Now there will be some respite from this all-consuming heat. That is the pivotal difference between the winter hunt and the summer hunt, the absorbing silence of snow and the drowning rackets of the golden noonday, the insect's wings like sharp shards of optical glass, the noise of crickets, blankets of smothering time, 1 foot in front of another, and the suffocation of a sky so intolerably blue, unbelievably civil. Thank you so much.
Thank you for that. That was amazing. Our second reader today is Wanda Promsma. Wanda is a poet and writer based in Kingston. Her works include A Thin Line Between, Book Hug, 2014, and Aversion/Nothing Special, Above Ground Press, 2022. Wanda's poems, nonfiction, and reviews have appeared in literary journals and newspapers in Canada and the U.S. She is the founder and organizer of Drift Line, a poetry and music series in Kingston. You know, an example of some of the cool magazines she's appeared in is this one, Feathertail Review. Mm. It's kind of a great design. It opens up like an accordion, and she has two interesting poems. Every now and then I'll get a magazine in the mail, and Wanda's poems are in it, so it's really great to see your new work. So please welcome Wanda to the stage.
Thank you, Jason. Hi, nice to see all of you, and it's great to be here. Thank you, Stuart, for inviting me, and Jason as well, I'm sure. I'm going to read from a couple of different works. I'm going to start by reading from my 2022 chapbook, Aversion/Nothing Special. There's two sections in this chapbook, and I'm going to read the first section, which actually, since it was a pandemic publication, I've actually never read this part at all. And I think the only things you maybe want to know about aversions is that the original title was Aversions to God, and I wrote it while living on Wolf Island. Burrow, dig, scrape, and remove. Throw dirt into piles. What's left? The hole. Peer in. And this is where aversion starts. Bleak, outward, missionless. Me, unknowing. A lack of speech. In existence, out existence. You simply weren't. Aimless, it's all one after the other. I'll have this and that, and then we'll lay there naked. All for pleasure, not for knowing you. Strong winds bring in the water green. Stronger winds bring in the water black. This behavior surrounded by commas and time. If I am going to live on this island, then I need to be able to get off this island. Relinquishing my labor, my choice, my fever, my glands, my voice. Step forward. Lift the back leg up. Open the heart. Gaze forward. Asymmetrical offering. Frightened. A delicate insolence. A crinoline rumble down the street. From Spain on the Camino, M says, the diehards are walking, but we are going by car because we don't have enough faith. I take the boat into town on a Sunday. For what? For restlessness, heat flipping through the veins. I think maybe a boat ride will help. On Nietzsche, he hates fine lines and sharp distinctions. He habitually confuses psychology and logic. He has a smeary mind. Every hour, a deadline, a dead loin. Meet it or wait. Freighted posture, a wick sniffled, fizzled, and black. This pushing, line by line, I am success. Everyone out there mowing their lawns, I will mow the whole farm down just to get a little peace. Sunday prayers fizzling through the drone. God, 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 good. That's it from for versions. And it's sort of strange to read that because I wrote it so long ago. Because I've lived on the mainland now for 10 years. The second half of this chapbook is nothing special, and it's largely poems and note poems from the early years of mothering, from having my two children. And I'm not going to read from it, but it's kind of a nice segue just to describe it to move into my new work. I've been working over the past year or two on a manuscript, and it's called How Clear. And it's, I suppose if I have to describe it, it's about the transformation through mothering to questioning of self, place, community, identity, and also words on the page, structure, formal structure, I suppose. So these are the beginning poems of How Clear. Creation of a whole, finishing, tightening, the farce of structure, its presumption and steamrolling of embodiment, the only certainty. I am more interested in the aesthetic of the unfinished, an ongoingness. I am more interested in a steady progression of expression. I am more interested in a full allowance, a complete unburdening. Non-linear capacity, mind observed, acknowledged, while seated, a carnival, cushioned slide deck of delight and delusion. On foot, a constant head-to-toe belief system, arrival into the trot, trit, mechanized, undoing, all signs point to yes. Among the lavender, sparrows, silky lambswool, how the chitter-chatter grates as I stare down fields of poppies, cosmos, bee balm, pygmy sunflowers, I will rest. One child, another child, piled, my bloated belly. Cicada heat, rummaging through a decade of experiments, quick to turn. South window, dust particles float through blue atoms. How are we whole when no thing is merged? Out in the world and tidily within own self quivering, no glimpses, goodbyes, too many masks and too few. Bodies heated into the afternoon, scanning the lake, the windmills, deconstructing the page to build it back up. It's infinity. It's no thingness. Widen the lens, sharpen the gaze, cure letters to the curvature of creation. Disrupt, interrupt, circumvent the subscription to convention. What holding? What releasing? What staying still? I do like sentences, those fettered beings shaped and behaving. I think I should take English classes, write essays, become analytical, stake out rooms, build walls, pillars, walkways through stone-cloaked campus. What is campus? My son asks. This is it we are traveling through. Truths learned, unlearned, winding back, forward, undoing. The mountains I draw, not really mountains, I tell my daughter, only if you want them to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Wanda. Really loved your new poems. And Wanda's book, A Thin Line Between, is available here as well. Got something. We're at the halfway point of the reading right now. And before we move on to the next reader, I'd like to pause and honor this moment of interlude by reading a poem I wrote called Interlude. It's from a chapbook that I wrote with the British poet Michael Glover. And I hope it'll be available here in the store within the next week or so. Maybe we can work on that. We only published 5 million copies. Get it while you can. This poem is called Interlude. I stand on my shore and witness no other. Here where the river's echo flows to the sea of its voice. And the falling leaf lives endlessly in the leaf, falling on and on. The water breaks, recovers, shatters, heals. A rain puddle lies nearby, an infant lake, hungry and awake in its crib of grass. A distant windmill grinds the sky to ground. I stand on no shore and witness another, where the wind is always passing, but never passed, and now has nowhere to be. Where the smoke has risen, a fire once was. Every road endures beyond dirt and gravel. What's left is still around, but it's not ours. Return my happiness to where it's from. Give my ring to the bell that made it sound. Thank you. Thank you for that. Thank you very much. Moving on to the next reader, Sarah Moses. Sarah is a Canadian writer and literary translator from Spanish and French. Her translations include Augustine Bastirica's Tender as the Flesh and 19 Claws and a Blackbird, Pushkin Press, Scribner, 2020 and 2023. And Die My Love by Arianna Harwitz, Charcoal Press, 2017, which was longlisted for the International Booker Prize and shortlisted for the Republic of Consciousness Prize, the Primo Val Inclán, and the Best Translated Book Award. With Thomas Downey, she co-translated Sos Una Sola Persona, by Socio Fundadores, 2020, a selection of poems by Stuart Ross. Forthcoming publications include a co-translation of Julio Cortazar's Letters with Anne McLean, Archipelago Books, and The Place Where Birds Die, stories by Thomas Downey, Invisible Publishing. Sarah has written one chapbook of fiction in Spanish, As They Say, by Socio Fundadores, 2016, and one in English, Those Problems, Proper Tales Press, 2016. Strange Water is her first full-length collection. She lives in Buenos Aires in Toronto, where she's from, a really great writer. But don't take my word for it. You can read what someone wrote on the back of the book. They said, thanks to science, we know our bodies are 60% water. And now, thanks to Sarah Moses, we know how strange that water is. These wild, surprising, playful stories offer a kaleidoscopic spin where characters, objects, cultural artifacts, and dreamlike scenes intersect and blur. The world is sopping wet, Moses writes. One by one, I wring out each of its meanings. This wonderful bucket of a book gathers every magical drop. And actually looks like I was the person that wrote that, so you can't take my word for it. Please welcome Sarah to the stage.
Thank you very much for that. So the first story I'm going to read was written with a dear and almost lifelong friend in mind on the occasion of her visit to Buenos Aires, which is indeed where I live. And things got a bit carried away, as they often do, and in the best of ways. It's called Rest Assured. You may find, on your return, that the apartment has been taken over by insects. Rest assured, with the exception of the giant moth that now lives in your bedroom, they will do you no harm. It is just a matter of getting used, for example, to the dense cloud of fruit flies in the kitchen, which will keep out of your way, provided you flail your arms wildly before sitting down for a meal, or the trail of ants that has formed between the front door and the cookie jar. You'll have no problem stepping over it. Speaking of the cookie jar, you'll want to inspect all dry goods before consuming them. I have discovered larvae and mysterious cotton-like formations in the rice, kidney bean, and oatmeal jars. Although there are, of course, no fruits in the bathroom, there are flies. They seem drawn to the toilet water, so you might want to flush once or twice before sitting down on the bowl. You might also want to avoid the bidet, as a small family of brown scorpions now lives there. Remains in working order. In the evening, large numbers of armored green bugs fly in through the windows I leave open to let in the cool air. By morning, they've usually all died, forming piles under the windowsills. They can be swept up easily enough with the brooms I place in each room for that purpose. The mosquitoes are everywhere. Not much can be done about that. As to the moth, you do well to avoid using all artificial lighting, including the lamp on your night table, the fixture hanging from the ceiling, your computer, and your cell phone. You may also wish not to light candles, or strike matches, or smoke anything that requires a flame to burn. Due to the moth's size and erratic movements, it would be in your best interest to stick to these suggestions, at least for the time being. And the next story I'm going to read is called The Island, and it is also about friendship, good friends, bad friends, and imaginary friends. I spend 2 weeks on the island. My friends come to visit. A bosom friend, a flirtatious friend, and a friend I had forgotten. They bring rations, poultices and potions, short stories and logbooks, popsicles, playing cards. We set up camp. My bosom friend reads to me. She describes greener and rockier islands to me, tells of birds with feathers like mirrors that shimmer and shake. She smooths my sheets and warns of the flirtatious friend. He arrives 2 days late, too early in the day. He lights a fire and removes the sheets from me, braids my hair and runs off and finds a ladybug and lets it crawl on me. We share a popsicle. He drips onto me. We play cards. My friend loses one game and another, and then he no longer wants to play. He prepares a poultice and a potion and finishes it, forgetting to offer me any. Now he shimmers and shakes. He wants to explore, though he knows I can't come along. The next day, at dawn, he's gone. All morning, I look up at the sky. The island seems barren and dry. I send out a smoke signal. Late at night, a voice comes calling. A friend from another time or place lies down next to me. He slips a ribbon from the pages of a logbook. Tells tall tales about distant ports of call. Talks of tiger fish and sea mist and palm oil. He brings news of inclement weather. The chimes and bells begin clinking. I've been thinking, my friend says, but the wind whisks his voice away. We wrap ourselves in the flapping sheets and follow the storm clouds across and then off the island. Skyscapes. They talk to you about the sky, about lifting them up to it, or your having fallen from it, as though these were things a person would want. You are not averse to conversations about the sky. For example, you would want them to tell you about snowflakes, flying machines, the aurora borealis. You would enjoy time spent looking at cloud formations. They do not understand. They are not from where you are from. They think this is the way to have their way with you. They try again. Now they tell you about who they have played against, what they have done best, how far they have gone. They tell you about the palace they bought for the family they do not yet have. In the courtyard, the brown water in the pond of goldfish rises and falls mysteriously, until one day the fish are poisoned by paint chips they mistake for pellets. They tell you about their church on an island of palm trees. When the tide is in and the waves are good, their god approves the surfing and cancels mass. They tell you about the movie they filmed in a cafe that serves mint tea and Turkish delight. People move through the movie as through life, without props, special effects, or second takes. You take these stories of lives lived in warmer and wilder climes, and you twist them, and you turn the tellers of them around. Now you do the telling. You tell them about an airplane that flew you to a country house in the mountains. The driver, who is from the town your father was born in and spoke the language he thinks in, looped it once, twice, thrice, then landed it in a field of flowers. You tell them about towers of gold, At sunrise, they are ochre, amber, rose. But when you stand beneath them, they are gray. The space is filling silently with snow. You tell them about will-o'-the-wisps and specters steaming through winter forests, and about night skies that are jade, aqua, that glow. What they want to know, they begin to say, but they are turned around. It comes out wrong, as a plea, as laughter, as birdsong. So this story, which is called Night Garden, has its origins in a fortuitous and mysterious translation mistake, and I think the mistake was ultimately more interesting than the correct version. The night was closed. I had not been asleep in it. I had been in the garden, rooting around for mushrooms, suckles, cloves. The garden was thick with blooms. There were leaves like brooms sweeping and fans whirring. Others like ears listening. I paid these no attention. I was at the edge. Beyond it, the ocean was not Pacific. It was frothing and sloshing. It had had a little too much to drink. I wandered into this strange water, and the clouds cleared a path to the lighthouse. Its beacon bled into the dawn. All around it, birds responded in song. Fish with long snouts like saws, and bells for tails, and translucent wings leapt into the air. The boats, ropes, and buoys nodded, applauded. The day opened one color at a time. Magnolia, apricot, lilac, in the hills, on the cliffs, in the thickets, hatches, yards, and barns. I took the dusty road into the crux of it, made a breakfast, bumble pie and cream whip, water infused with linden, lemongrass. Then I went back out to the garden. The early air was sweet, and I hung my hammock beneath the tree of sleep. And I'm going to read another story about friends, clearly a subject of much interest. This one is called A Friendly Person. Excuse me, by any ghost of a chance, might you be a friendly person? Not a false friend or another specter. A fellow spirit to chase after sun dogs and sundry mirages. Someone amenable to extended games of hide and seek in a hammock with good give. Who is enthused by a good lagoon, a fine tree, a sandbank. Who would go for a swim in an indigo stain left by the rain, or a sudden cascade, or a golden ribbon. A person open to sanguine slips into unknown tongues in the occasional malapropism. Who is liable to large helpings of bumble pie and fingerfuls of cream whip. You will find, friendly person, that sometimes I eat too many questions, that I ask too much of food, that I can be foolish, shellfish, that I say the wrong sounds, though I pick the right words. I vacillate eternally. When I yawn, I do so strangely, wildly. I amass trinkets of a pretty and practical nature, but I am lacking in living essentials, grooming supplies, kitchen implements, tools for the home. I do what is my best, lest you think otherwise. What was that you said? You might not be a friendly person. What about you over there, or you in the red cap? By any ghost of a chance, might you be friendly to this person? And the last one is called Those Problems. The ocean can help you forget those problems. Problems with your spouse or your life partner. Problems with your boss at the office, or problems because you don't have an office. Problems seeing objects from a distance or from up close. Problems with your skin, such as adult onset acne or varicose veins. Relationship problems because you have a boyfriend who looks at your friends while you're looking at him. Health problems because you weigh too much or too little. Problems when you try to fall asleep or when you try to have sex. Problems with your addiction to cigarettes or to coffee or to refined sugar. Problems because you are stressed, or depressed or anxious, and other problems too. The ocean has already helped many people with their problems. They go to wherever the earth ends and the water begins, and they sit in the sand, or on top of a cliff, or on a bench overlooking the waves. They don't look like they are doing much, and neither will you, but they are letting the ocean carry away their problems on the crest of a wave, or on the shoulders of a humpback whale. They may have spotted a sand crab to bury their problems in a dark tunnel below the beach, or a seashell so their problems can wind round and round the hollow home of a snail lost at sea. If your problems are many, you might consider feeding them to a school of rainbow fish. Or if you've just one problem, and it's a big one, you could let a shark feast on it for supper. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. That was amazing. It was wonderful. The final reader is the one and only Stuart Ross, a dear friend and mentor to many in the Canada community and around the world, actually. Really excited to hear Stuart read from his new collection, The Sky is a Sky in the Sky. It's from Coach House Books, and if you maybe on Instagram or your YouTube channel, you can actually see Stuart at the press binding the book, and it's quite an experience to see that. So really looking forward to this. Whenever I introduce Stuart, I'm always aware of time because reading his impressive bio adds about 20 minutes to every event. So I'll begin now. Stuart Ross has published over 20 books, most recently the memoir The Book of Grief and Hamburgers, winner of the 2023 Trillium Book Award, and the short story collection I Am Claude Francois and You Are a Bathtub. A Sparrow Came Down Resplendent won the Canadian Jewish Literary Award for poetry. Buying Cigarettes for the Dog won the Relit Award for short fiction. Stuart has also won awards for fiction from the Jewish Public Library in Montreal and one for poetry from l'Académie de la Vie Littéraire. In 2018, Stuart received the Harbourfront Festival Prize for his contributions to Canadian literature. Tonight, Stuart launches his 13th full-length poetry book, The Sky is a Sky in the Sky, just out from Coach House Books. Stuart's poetry and fiction have been translated into Nyorsk, French, Spanish, Russian, Slovene, and Estonian, and he runs the Feed Dog Book imprint for Surrealist Poetry at Anvil Press, and the 1366 Books imprint for Experimental Fiction at Guernica Editions. Stuart has collaborated with several Montreal artists and writers, including the poets Jason Camelot and Sarah Burgoyne, filmmaker James Hawes, and painter Nadine Farage. Goodreads contributor Stevie wrote about The Book of Grief and Hamburgers, "For a poem book, I guess it's okay. Poem books are not my favorite."
Oh, thank you so much, Jason. It's always so hard to live up to Stevie's praise. It's my life's mission now. Thank you all so much for being here. It's great to see friends and people I don't know, and thank you so much, Vera and Wanda, for joining us, and it's great to hear you read again, Sarah, tonight. And thank you so much to Oscar and Joanna and this incredible bookstore for making this space available for literary events and literary community. So The Sky is a Sky in the Sky is from Coach House Books. And when I was 15 years old, I was in an alternative school in the north end of Toronto. And these acid freak poets, like Victor Coleman and David Young and Joe Rosenblatt, came and they taught in the school for a few days or a week at a time. And one of them dragged us down to Coach House Books, downtown Toronto, which was my first ever experience being at a publisher place. And it was so exciting. So amazing. It was so inspiring, and it was a place I returned to quite a bit whenever I was downtown, and they were welcoming me there all the time. And I dreamed at age 15 that someday it would be so incredible to have a book from Coach House Press, it was called at the time, and have my book alongside Daphne Marlett and Joe Rosenblatt and all of these people, Michael Ondaatje. And And it took 50 years, and now it is done. And it's been a very exciting experience. I love poetry. I hate poems that contain the word mortal, the word angel, the word liminal, the word beauty, the word scent. Mortal coil is particularly loathsome, though Eddie Coyle was mortal is passable. I hate poems that mention Perseus, Heracles, Hephaestus, Infestus, Hydrochloricidius, but I like hideous, rancid Gizmo. Oh, Orpheus is okay if it's in a poem by Mark Strand. Eclogue, blech. Epilogue, pretty good. I hate the word ekphrastic so much it makes me hate ekphrastic poems, except for Ron Padgett's Joe Brainard's painting Bingo, the best poem ever written. I met Joe once to interview him and was delighted he had never heard of Margaret Atwood. I hate poems that contain the phrase I love unless they are written by Lisa Jarnot, and I love Lisa Jarnot's poem, Lisa Jarnot. I hate poems that want to teach me something. Epigraphs from Isaiah, Leviticus, and Dana Goya are non-starters. I once offered Alice Burdick, Jamie Forsyth, and Lancel Rock $200 to start up a photocopied lit mag of Nova Scotia poetry. Another time, I cut off part of my thumb with an X-Acto knife. I hate myself for loving poetry. I love myself for hating poetry. I hate poems about poetry. So, I asked before I read a few people what page should I read from, and they told me page numbers. So if you don't like these poems, it's not, I'm not to blame. They're terrible choices. I write a poem usually on my birthday, and in 18th of July 2020, I wrote this one, Poem at 61. There's an epigraph by Flann O'Brien from his novel The Dalkey Archive. There was a little silence. I can't decide which of my feet is best. I put neither forward. There are so many people floating around now. The clouds are teeming. Music saturates our bones. I open a letter. It indicates that I contain a skeleton. Put your ear to my rib cage and listen. Do you hear the voices of my family? Dry leaves whirl around me. Snow covers my shoulders. It melts. Oh, regard the magnificent kingfishers alighting upon my brow. There is no reason to shudder. Absorb the soft hug of silence. Lift thy skeleton into the air. The abundant wonders will never bumble. Film Festival. A movie about two people. A movie about two can openers. A movie about death crawling through a supermarket. A movie about the tension between competing products. A movie about a wise turnip. A movie about silent music. A movie about books with no pages. A movie about a pill that erases memory. A movie about I can barely lift myself up out of this chair. A movie about a movie about exhaustion. A movie about walking into a wall. A movie about a porcupine that becomes sheriff in a small prairie town. A movie about an unfilled grave. A movie about dancing with my grandmother at my bar mitzvah. A movie about ashtrays. A movie about lining up at night in the cold. A movie about noses. Which will I read here? This is the one that was... so this is written on... This is called 25th of July 2020, so I guess it was written 7 days after my birthday poem. 25th July 2020. A mask slides all over my face and shoulders. The solid white line dividing the lanes is flaking. Charles North reads Nathaniel West's The Day of Locus Solus. The lead in my pencil keeps breaking. That's not chewed gum, it's ants. I don't know what I was thinking about that last one. I can't see in any way that chew gums and it looks anything like ants. I don't know what the hell I was thinking. Okay. Okay.
Black ball licorice ones, maybe.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, thank you very much. That's what I'll tell people now. Math and science for Barry. I was 35 when Mum died at 66, 41 when Owen died at 46, a tiny lull, then still 41 when Dad died at 76. Now I am 60, Barry, and you are gone 4 days now at 69. For 19 years, it was just us two. We talked on the phone one time a week, 988 times, except 1 year when we said zero to each other. So that's 936. If we saw each other one time a month, except for those 12 after we fought, that's 216 times we saw one another when it was just the two of us. The final wisp of smoke from your final cigarette may still be perceivable among the clouds. The precise composition of smoke depends on the nature of the fuel, the temperature of the flame, and wherever the hell the wind is going, and whether it's in a hurry. Math and science are ways to not think about things that are not math and science. Whoever chose page 63, I'm vetoing it. It's another depressing poem. Oh, this is, okay, this is, I was really inspired by, I mentioned Joe Brainard earlier. He was born in Tulsa, but became very well known in the New York art and literary scene. Sort of as a poet, but he never really wrote many poems, except my favorite poem, which is actually my favorite poem. It's not Joe Brainard's painting Bingo by Ron Padgett. It's a poem by Joe Brainard called Poem, and it goes, "Sometimes everything seems so, oh, I don't know." And what I love about that poem is it is a poem that I think it's absolutely exquisite, and it doesn't have a single interesting word in it. And yet it's a beautiful, perfect poem. So Joe Brainard wrote a lot of these one-line things. So I, in a few of my books now, I've had sort of one-line poems. This is called Self-Portrait after Joe Brainard. Crisp. My hand is cold amid the celery. Bath mat. Everyone's feet turn to water. Mathematics. I don't add up. Follower. You all buy potato chips after I. Divinity. The finger in my right nostril heard confession from the finger in my left. Elbow wax. The coffee table slides beneath my arm. Wet towel. Matters have become rather heavy. Weeping willow. Where the trunk meets the ground, I sit in sorrow. Weather report. I did not choose to fasten my puckered lips to the storm cloud. Falling. I fall and pass the falling bird. Station wagon. The ditch skids onto the highway, swaying. Pony. I was never upon a pony. Window. My neighbor burns his toast. No school. Various sick cheeses skated across my broken etch-a-sketch. Dead tree. The leaves fill my cheeks. Chinese food. Everyone pass everything at once, but slowly. I think I'm just going to read a couple more. Let's see. Which one will I make last? Okay, I'll make that one last. Okay, so this is called The Dot Was Red. So I worked at Harlequin Romance,